28. Cassie's face transforms from confusion to recognition, to unfettered delight upon seeing Owen. Here is her old friend, just as she remembers him, before he was lost to sorrow and hardened by the military. She shoves her way past the strangers between them and crouches down to place her hands on his face. The moment must be strange for Owen. This Cassie is 30 years older than the one he is friends with, but he had no trouble recognizing her. "There you are," she says, looking in his eyes, seeing something in him that's been missing in me. She kisses his forehead and pulls him into a hug. Then she looks up and sees my father. As tears fill her eyes, she all but leaps into his arms.
"Mr. McCoy!"
Despite them being nearly the same age now, she still refers to him the way she did when we were children. "You've grown up," my father observes. To him, the reunion is different. He saw 11-year-old Cassie just yesterday. I think he's a little thrown by her affectionate response, but eventually he wraps his arms around her. For him, the reunion is a leap through time. For Cassie and for me, it is a kind of resurrection. When she finally sees me standing there, eyes wet, she slips away from my father and gives me a slow, gentle hug. I attempt to blink away tears as she cries into my chest. This isn't just about my younger self's appearance or my father's return. She's as relieved to see me alive as I am her. "This is my Cassie," I tell myself. The woman in the woods is her future, was her future. Whatever brought her to that point, I'm going to stop it. When we separate, it's by inches, just enough to look each other in the eyes. Before she can speak or move any further, I lean down and place my lips against hers. It's the most gentle and loving physical contact I've had with another person in all my life. We're locked there for what feels like hours, and we separate only when the silence around us hints that we're being watched by everyone.
"What was that for?" Cassie whispers.
"Making up for lost time."
"Yes!"
Owen says with a pump of his fist. After a good laugh, I say, "Apparently I've been waiting a long time to do that."
"Too long," she says.
And then the romantic moment comes to a sudden end.
"I was wondering when you two would finally bone."
Kuzneski. He has left the security booth and entered the barracks full of people he's holding prisoner. Then I realize that while his voice is the same, the tone is different. His smiling face is free of the scars I gave him, and his eyes are devoid of loathing. This is my Kuzneski, still dressed in his Synergy security uniform. Despite the sour circumstances, he greets me with a smile and a firm handshake.
"Holy turd balls, is it good to see you. Have you seen that shit going on around here? I mean, time travel? Shit. And my future self? What an asshat."
Seeing him gives me hope that the rest of my people are alive and well. "Where are the others? Brown? Harper?" His smile fades.
"Dude."
A slow shake of his head tells me everything I need to know, but I can see there's something more weighing on him. "What is it? What happened?"
"It was like a call, man."
Kuzneski steps closer, lowering his voice, but not nearly enough to conceal his words from anyone around us, which is a lot of people.
"Those robots, fucking robots, they appeared out of nowhere, like an army of them, and they just tore into people. But not everyone. It was like they had a kill list. They'd lock onto a target, pause for a second, and then either blast them to bits or let them go. Far as I can tell, those of us who were spared have our future selves to thank."
Like me, even Langdon must not know what would happen if your past self died. Would it create a paradox? Would you cease to exist? The safe bet in their situation was to gather up their past selves and lock them away for safekeeping. But that would mean... What about Langdon? Kuzneski hitches a thumb over his shoulder.
"In the back room, talking to some guy dressed like he's from the 1920s, but I'm telling you right now, he's ex-military or something. Has the same kind of, I could rip your throat out with my pinky toe look that you sometimes do."
"You can do that?"
Owen asks, eyes wide. "No," I tell him. Kuzneski seems to notice my younger self for the first time. Gives him a double take.
"It's me," I say. "He's me."
"I'm him," Owen says, "but younger and still good looking."
Kuzneski's eyes widen.
"Holy shit!"
He looks at my dad. Sees the familiarity, knows what it means.
"Holy shit!"
He's smiling again.
"Dude, you must be psyched. I mean, holy shit, right?"
"Holy shit,"
Owen says with a smile, and this time my father places a hand on his shoulder, prompting a quick apology.
Sorry.
I'm a bad influence, Kuzneski says as an apology to my father. It's why I don't have kids.
Or a girlfriend,
Cassie adds.
Hey, until like 10 seconds ago, both of you are part of the solo master debating team, so...
What's a master debater?
Owen asks.
Like someone who's good at debating?
He looks at me.
I thought you were a soldier.
Oh, he likes to play with his gun. Ow!
Cassie slugs Kuzneski in the shoulder.
Okay, okay, I'm just glad to see you guys.
Likewise, I say. As much as he might be introducing my younger self to a bevy of new foul language, I appreciate the levity.
You want to see the man in charge? Kuzneski adds. Not that he's in charge, but you know what I mean. He's the only one with any kind of sense about what's happening.
I scan the throng of people looking for anyone who might be trouble or pose a threat. Most of them have been plucked out of various time periods, from the 1980s on back. They're sitting on the hard linoleum floor of the 20-foot-wide, 30-foot-long space that has 3 dorm rooms, complete with 3 sets of bunk beds on each side. Like the rest of the building, it's a sterile and depressing place, reflected in the eyes of the folks watching me back. Some of the people are boons, all the fight taken out of them. The few people from the present I recognize are Synergy employees, though I don't know their names or positions. But if they're alive, it means their future selves are here, and allied with a sinister version of Langdon. A group of Cherokee Indians are gathered in the corner, keeping to themselves, eyeing everyone else with suspicion, which makes sense. In their time, they're being hunted and chased from their lands. And now they're prisoners. What must be confusing for them is that they're sharing this prison with mostly white people. Likewise, most of the people from various futures are keeping a watchful eye on the Indians, who have been stripped of their weapons like everyone else, but look far more capable of kicking some ass. And it's probably true. But they're no less afraid. I decide to address them first. The best thing all these people can do to help our current situation, if there is any way to help it at all, is to work together. Give me a minute, I say to my father and Cassie, and I head for the group of Cherokee. They tense at my approach, but take no action. There are 4 men and 3 women, all in their late 20s and 30s, I'd guess. Not quite elders of the tribe, but responsible adults, probably with children of their own to worry about. I squat down beside them and ask, English?
Only the elders cannot speak your language,
the young man says. He is full of spitfire despite his obvious fear. Do you know Enola? I ask. The man's face lights up.
Where is she?
He looks around the room, desperate. Not here, I tell him. But she was safe the last time I saw her. She's outside of this place, but... The man grips my arm.
Outside is not safe.
Because of the... I can't think of how to describe the robots. Because of this place? He looks offended by the suggestion that it is Synergy he fears. He leans closer and whispers,
Tsul Kalu.
I nearly say, are you serious? But I manage to hold back. Who am I to throw water on their crazy beliefs when we're 700 years in the past? The world is full of unbelievable things. Instead, I nod and say, I met Enola by his grave. He gives his head an exasperated shake.
I told her not to, and now he hunts again.
Because the grave is missing? The man seems to melt in fear. I've just confirmed his worries. I take hold of his wrist, getting his full attention. Who is Enola to you?
My sister,
he says. And your name is?
Waya.
Listen, Waya, I am your sister's friend. We fought side by side, and I will do everything I can to reunite you with her. But for now, can you do something for me? He waits for my request in silence. I motion to my father and Owen. That is my brother and son, both of whom are also Enola's friends. Especially my father, I think. Watch over them when I am not present. If you can do that for me, I will do everything in my power to protect your people, including Enola. He ponders the offer for a moment and then gives a half nod. It's not the most enthusiastic agreement, but I'll take it. I offer my hand and he takes it. After a firm shake, I say, thank you, and I return to my group. Those are Enola's people, I tell my father. The man I was talking to is her brother, Waya. He is not the most personable guy, but stay with them and they'll keep you both safe. I tousle Owen's hair with my hand.
You know we hate that, right?
Owen says. I smile down at him. That's why I did it. Then I turn to Cassie and Kuzneski. Far as I'm concerned, all of these people are under our care. Doesn't matter if dickhead versions of ourselves have hijacked our present. Keeping these people safe is our job. Both nod in agreement. I'm about to have Kuzneski lead us to my Langdon when I'm struck by the realization that someone is missing. Where's Levi? Cassie frowns, and for a moment I fear the worst. We got separated when Boone's people came for us. Last I saw him, he was headed downhill. From what I've seen, the farther he gets from the mountain, the safer he'll be, but I still don't know how far the time flux effect reaches. I'd hate for him to wander below its range and be stuck alone in the past. Not your fault, I say before she can apologize. The only way we can help him is to put a stop to all this. I turn to Kuzneski. Where is he? He motions to the rearmost bunk room with his head and then leads the way. Most everyone in the room watches us go. Some, like people from the present and Boone's people, recognize me to some degree. Some of them might even fear me. The rest just seem to understand that I'm taking charge, though I can't yet say if they resent or welcome my addition to Synergy's temporal internment camp. I open the door and step into the room unannounced. Despite the cramped conditions in the main hall and the adjoining dorm rooms, there are only two people here, Dr. Langdon and Minuteman.